The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
In 2016, Northrop Aerospace Systems released a concept of what they predicted would be the design to replace current fifth-generation aircraft like the Lockheed Martin F-22. This craft sported an exotic swept-wing design that recalled the innovations that were combined within the legendary B-2 stealth bomber. While the development of both aircraft is separated by decades, the actual concept of a flying wing design can trace its origins to Nazi Germany at the end of World War II. The Nazis were known to have produced a multitude of remarkable aircraft designs that were years ahead of their time. Some of these craft were claimed to have unusual properties that would have given them unmatched maneuverability and combat capabilities. In the closing months of World War II, Allied pilots reported spotting strange craft that seemed to shadow their movements behind enemy lines, describing what seemed to be balls of multicolored light that appeared to be intelligently controlled. This case file joined the theorists as they make sure these pilots weren't chasing birds and go ever long in discussing the Foo Fighters.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 188, Foo Fighters. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
I'm deaf. Jesus.
Hey, Braden, check your mic. Check, check, check. Welcome to Alien
Braden
just peeked all over the place. Now I got a compressor. He's live in the studio, so I can drop him down a bit.
I don't tone down. I do it the same every time. It's nice to be back in studio, though. It's kind of fun. Dan, we're missing you. But
three in studio, virtual Dan head also on the
Zordan.
Screen. Zordan.
Yeah, there he is. Oh, no, it's over.
Next time, though, hopefully by the fall.
Maybe.
Hey, Dan.
We lift Dan up.
There you go.
Yeah. Put him on the shoulder.
Tonight, we're talking about Foo Fighters. Now, the question kind of means Zell, we're going back and forth with because of this one. In these kind of instances, are you more inclined to believe like a firsthand encounter, like someone who tells you like, hey, this wild stuff that happens, or like a secondhand, basically scientific reasoning but they're not encompassing everything that the person's saying, like from the first,
like an expert taking the encounter and be like,
it's gotta be this.
Most likely it's this.
It's gotta be this. Even when the person who encountered it's like, no, it's not the same thing. Like, I understand what you're saying, but it's not the same thing. That's not what's happening. Well, like, Dan, I know you're like, science.
Well, it depends who's saying it.
But, like, I was thinking about it. It's like, it's a tough one because, especially for this case, you know, I tend to believe these people that had the firsthand account.
Well, especially like for today, like the way we're talking about scientists, but these people are also experts in their field, right?
Yeah, exactly.
These are professional pilots that have seen shit.
Yeah, like, it's not like it's fucking Cletus at the trailer park. I seen tech. Right? These are professionals. Well, maybe Cletus is an expert too. I guess I shouldn't have said
he's
that.
He's dusting crops.
Yeah, he's
Yes. Yeah. I mean, for me, it comes down to like, I believe the pilot. If he says he's seen something, I believe him. But then it comes down to like, in the moment, what he's seen actually what he saw? And that's where the other side comes in. Like, okay, the scientist is like, okay, the pilot's in the air. He's seen this object, but he's upside down. He's banking right. Maybe perhaps he misidentified something else.
Okay. So like in this scenario, we're talking about there's one observer and there's one basic scientific explanation that they're putting forward. But now let's say you have like, tens of people, hundreds of people in separate instances, all claiming the same thing. Like, do you start to believe the multiple people experiencing the same experience or the same person that's sticking to that same scientific reasoning for everything?
Mass hysteria.
Ball lightning. Multiple people giving a roughly the same description of the event and stuff. Yeah, I mean, it definitely for me makes it more plausible to believe if like there's a bunch of different people from different aircrafts that'd be like, yeah, we all seen something.
We seen it.
Dan, what do you think?
I think if we took everything at face value or first-hand account, then we would still think that Zeus is throwing down thunderbolts from Mount Olympus. So
is he not?
How do we know he's not?
Yeah.
Where does lightning come from then, Dan?
So static electricity.
It comes from Zeus's fingers.
Yeah, he rubs them together.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're almost there. Like it's air molecules, like all kind of rubbing into each other, right, creating Zeus? Static electricity, just like you do when you rub your feet on the carpet.
Who moves the air molecules? Zeus.
Exactly. I don't know, man. You know what? Sounds like you're going fucking hero to zero real quick. All right, reverse.
So obviously tonight we're talking about the Foo Fighters, and what.
Guy's got fucking.
What are we
got? Like four accents, and I'm gonna hit it as many times as I can tonight.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's just how it's pronounced.
How it's pronounced.
Emphasis on the fighter.
Yeah. Who fighter? Yeah, that's good. So, what are the Foo Fighters, Dan? Why don't you take us? Let's go through a brief overview.
Well, the Foo Fighters were formed by Dave Grohl after Nirvana broke out. Tragic death of Kurt Cobain.
That's a tough. Well, we're not going to name names of who did it. We know
they're multi. They are a multi-platinum band. They're amazing.
They still rock for all these years.
But we are alien theorists theorizing, so we're not talking about those Foo Fighters. We're talking about the Foo Fighters, which were pretty much the coverall term for what World War II pilots were reported seeing in multiple theaters during World War II of these lights some sort of objects that seem to follow their planes or it's in some fashion or something like that. And they used to like change colors. They were observed changing colors. They were changing directions, and sometimes. So one of the first accounts we have, it's not the very first account, but probably one of the most notorious accounts is you have a from Lieutenant Fred Ringwald in the November of 1944, and he was riding on a observer on a night fighter, which was piloted by Lieutenant Ed Schluter with Lieutenant Donald J. Myers on radar. So they were on kind of cruising behind enemy lines, doing their job, doing what they were supposed to do. And they ended up spotting what seemed to be 8 or 10 of these glowing, fiery orange objects. And these things, they radioed into Allied ground radar.
Think about Zalarius casting a firebolt.
That's what they look like.
Heat-seeking firebolt.
Yeah.
And when they radioed into Allied ground radar, they didn't turn up. These things that they saw or were seen right in front of them, weren't showing up on ground radar, and they weren't showing up in their radar in the plane at all. So Schluter decides to turn the plane to try and fight these things, assuming that it's some type of Nazi aircraft. Maybe it's just not showing up or something like that. And then they said that the lights vanished.
So he pulled evasive maneuvers, is what you're saying.
Well, no, right. He pulled like
attack maneuver.
Zell and I watched this documentary about some of the people that were like in the like airborne division who were seeing Foo Fighters. And they were like, the guy was basically like, we sought out enemy planes. If we thought we saw an enemy plane, like
we would pursue.
We would pursue and attack. He's like, we looked forward to it, and that's what we did. So he's like, if we saw it in the sky, we would go and chase it down. So like this guy's about, he's like, I don't know what this is. Got to be the Germans. I'm going after it. Like hard bank, like
highway to the danger zone. Yeah. Well, these guys are all hopped up on adrenaline, and then a lot of Germans were hopped up on meth. They're fucking, let's fucking do it.
And that's like, that's been proven now that they gave soldiers and pilots and stuff meth to keep them like focused and
we're giving kids meth in school energized. To pay attention. You got ADD, here's a little bit of meth.
That's true.
Right out.
Ritalin's a hell of a drug.
It is. Got me through paramedic school.
It's insane.
Yeah, most of the pilots that reported seeing these things were on active patrols behind German lines. Like they were seeking out enemy fighters. They were seeking out enemy convoys, supply runs, anything that they could get there. Pretty much if they saw something, they were going
to
blow it up.
Well, to that point, Dan, you got to think that these people are on edge because it's like, if you don't spot them first, and you're in the sky and they get a position on you and shoot you first, you're fucked.
Dude.
You're absolutely fucked. So like you'd be so on edge.
Dude, I remember playing fucking Afterburner at Scandia, Dolphin Games, shit in my pants because guys are shooting at me. You're in a flying death trap.
That's a great game.
Dude, so the Lieutenant Fred Ringwald encounter is just one. I mean, there was another one that was reported just the next month in December 17th of 1944 near Breisach, Germany, where a pilot was apparently flying at about 800 feet when he saw five or six of these flashing red and green lights that seemed to be flying in some sort of like a T formation. And then these lights seemed to follow him. And he said that they closed into about 8 o'clock at 1,000 feet and then disappeared.
Gone. Now, did they give on both these accounts, did they give us a rough size or they couldn't really tell because they were glowing objects? They couldn't tell how far they were.
No, most of these reports that I pulled up were from American Legion magazine or something like this. Like these accounts were taken from pilots like in the 1940s, the magazine was actually published late 1940s.
I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, Dan, if it's not Der Spiegel, I don't want to fucking read it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a trusted source unless it's Der Spiegel.
Der Spiegel is the only magazine I'm fucking into.
I'm subscribed to one magazine. Guess what magazine it is?
Der Spiegel.
Der Spiegel.
Der Spiegel.
If you got to that point yet.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, so some of these, like in the magazine that they wrote some of these reports in, they were saying that a lot of these pilots they saw these things, they saw strange stuff while they were flying over Germany all the time. It wasn't unusual,
right?
You know, it was just like they said if we spent one of the sayings that they would kind of mention was that pilots would be like, if we had to explain or report every single strange thing that we saw while flying, like we wouldn't get to fly. Like
so it just makes you think,
spend all our time just writing reports.
So it makes you think that the shit that they're seeing right now is like that extraordinary that they're fucking going another way to report it, then I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Like these and so, fiery orbs.
Yeah.
Like
this phenomenon was not isolated only to the German front or the European front. So you had actually sightings in Japan or over Japan as well. So you had reports of B-29 crews.
Is that the Japanese version of the B-52 band or what?
What? The B-29? No, B-29. Okay. Stratofortress? Superfortress?
That was the biggest plane of its day, right?
Yeah, that was the monster. Like that was the big old one. B-29 is the plane that I think that was one of the planes that dropped the A-bomb.
And then they retired them all somewhere in New Mexico. Isn't like a graveyard of like hundreds and hundreds of these planes?
Yeah, they were prop planes. I don't think any of them converted to jet engines. So I think most of them were just kind of like once
scrap metal.
Once jet propulsion came into its own, it was kind of like, well, we don't need these anymore.
Right.
So B-29 crews were reporting seeing balls of fire is the description that most of them give, which would follow their planes and occasionally like come up as close as what some of them described to as on their tails of their planes and just sit there. They described the same thing of the kind of color changing phenomenon that the other ones had. So these objects would seem to change color from orange to red to white and back again. And then some of these, now some of the accounts a little bit differ as to kind of the nature of these balls of fire, or the Foo Fighters is which they, what they called them. And they said that some of the B-29 crews could actually lose these balls of fire by taking evasive maneuvers, even though that this ball seemingly could keep up with them at their top speed, which for a B-29 is 365 miles per hour.
Goodness gracious.
So slow for today, but fast back then.
Yeah.
Right. And then, but then there were other B-29 crews that said, exact opposite, that these things were able to just keep up with them the whole time. They couldn't lose
while they were trying to evade them. Because right. there was one person that used the term, I can't remember what he said, like intelligent maneuvering by these things when he was trying to evade them. When I was watching one of the docs we were watching today, the guy was talking about it. He goes, they made intelligent maneuvers. And he's like, the kind of maneuvers they make weren't it's not random events that could happen in nature. This was some sort of phenomenon.
Like, seemed to be following.
It seemed to be following and banking and like pursuing. Like that's
mimicking
what
their
seemed.
Moves, maybe?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, right? So kind of keeping up. If it went left, they went left. They went right. It would maintain distance, and you're like, obviously they're just glowing balls. You can't like notice a propulsion or wings or anything. But it seemed to a lot of these pilots like they were just able to match them. So
yeah, there's another report in the Pacific Theater of a B-24 Liberator that was 11,000 feet over Truk Lagoon, which is part of the Caroline Islands in the Western Pacific, which is right above New Guinea. And they reported seeing two red lights move up from below them and follow the B-24. You know, after 1 hour of these lights following them, they said that one seemed to veer off and disappear. Like it turned back, and then they had just the one following them. And they said that the other one kept on moving. Sometimes it was behind them, sometimes alongside, and then sometimes as far as 1,000 yards ahead of them is what they're estimated. And then this thing kept following them until daybreak. Is what they reported. And then it seemed to climb to 15,000 feet and then just like moved in towards the sun and then was gone.
It's just disappeared again. And it's one of those things like we talked about earlier where we said they weren't reporting everything, because if they reported every weird thing they saw, but this one was a little different because, you know, at some point you start to wonder like, are these enemy crafts? Like, it was becoming known that like the Germans were kind of into some freaky shit, and you know, with experimental crafts, and you know, the head of the game with the V2 rockets. So at some point, like this crossed someone's desk, they're like, this is a possibility. I think that why the Foo Fighters like gained so much steam compared to other things is because there was probably some serious concern that this could be an Axis, new Axis technology that we weren't aware of,
like new enemy tech.
Yeah.
They didn't know what it was, so that's why they called them Foo Fighters. So Foo being it was like a, back then it was kind of a popular, like 1930s, 1940s, it was like a popular nonsensical word.
Some people, slang.
Yeah, it was like slang. The origins are a little bit murky. The etymology is not 100%. People are saying it was kind of taken from fooey or fe, or kind of just like that kind of word. Yeah. but it was popularized. They said that most of the origins can be attributed to the comic Smokey Stover. There's a comic strip that was written by Bill Holman at the time, who Smokey Stover was a firefighter, and he kind of had a popular catchphrase that was, where there's foo, there's fire. And foo just kind of meant just like tomfoolery or kind of unusual. It was just like a placeholder nonsensical word.
Nonsense.
Yeah, it's
so slang. They thought, by the way, these balls of fire were moving, like all nonsensical. They related it and said, those are foo fires.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, where there's weird stuff. That's, you know, so they just said foo.
What a weird connection.
Something completely different.
Well there's another one as well.
There's a bunch of different ones.
It's the sound that the spaceships make or whatever, like any type of flying saucers is foo. And that's what it would say in the comics. They'd write foo. To make, you know,
I didn't hear like that
the,
one.
No, I didn't hear that
like
one.
But that one,
you know, like the thwip or the shink.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's the noise. It's the fucking
like the verbal. Yeah, they write out the sound as foo.
Yeah,
because I also heard
pull it up.
No, I believe
you. But we heard multiple. We read multiple.
There was also
today.
It was also because there was an airborne. There was like an air division of like the of France and like in French is fire. And they said, and one story we read was because it was a French pilot who coined the term, and it was feu, like fire in French, and fighter. So like,
and it's that was the other version. They appeared as balls of fire, and they were perceived to be enemy crafts. And I, that's what I said too. I went, well, that makes more sense than this fucking with this foo, smoky there's fucking, a fire,
like smoky stove. Or
it could have been as easy as
let me show you something.
It could have been as easy as the name has come. Like because it was Americans and French, maybe they both came up their own types of names for it from different ways.
There was a third one too. I can't remember, but if you watch Ancient Aliens on History Channel, they had a completely different origin for the name.
Yeah, I think there's a couple origins that are kind of, it's not 100% sure, but the one that is, that I read was that the, one of the army intelligence officers that was, it was Fritz something during a meeting where they had, they were talking or they were reporting about this. Like they had some radar reporters reporting in some weird shit. And then he was like, it was one of those fucking Foo Fighters again. Cause he had the comic. Apparently he had the comic on him. He had been reading the comic or the comic strip. And then he says, one of those fucking Foo Fighters. And then they referred to it for a while as fucking Foo Fighters, but then they had to actually clean it up for the Associated Press, which came in and like started asking them about these before they printed an article, which was followed by a New York Times article about this. Like there's an actual archive New York Times article about these strange occurrences.
Right.
About the fucking Foo Fighters.
The Foo Fighters.
The fucking, yeah, the Foo Fighters.
The fucking Foo the Fighters.
Fucking. So
someone keep a tally.
So you have these strange occurrences going on, and there are a number of possible explanations, but usually the first thing that pops into a conspiracy minded person like or conspiracy minded persons like ourselves is of course the wonderful
Nazi
world
Germany.
Of Nazi UFOs.
We're nearing the end of the war. The rumors are rampant about advanced tech that Nazis have that's going to take over the skies. And then people start seeing these Foo Fighters. And I mean, it's easy to make the connection that maybe there's experimental craft that maybe weren't armed with. Because as far as we know, as all the encounters, they were never aggressive. Like the fighters never attacked or they never like, right? They were just, they pursued. Yeah,
none of the pilots reported like really at taking any hostile action against these
other
craft.
Other than just tailing it seemed like.
So, yeah, other than tailing think, like, it or observing them from a distance, like these things never really seemed to do anything else besides that. There was never any attack. There was never any, nothing really.
You know? Right. So yeah, I mean, Nazi wonder weapons or like their wonder craft. We've talked about like the bell before, but there's other ones we can go through. The only thing for me is like it's a glowing ball, and there's just really no, there's only size of these balls. Some people think, oh, maybe they're only like the size of basketballs, and the other guys, oh no, they're size of a Volkswagen. You're like, well, I guess it would depend on your vantage point to the light.
Okay, well also like when we started to look into the Nazi aspect of it, part of me thought about how, like, in World War I, World War II, like, Britain and the Allies, they would literally use, like, inflatable tanks and shit and, like, dress up tanks and, like, posture them on the battlefield.
Beef up
as,
the
like,
field.
As a scare tactic, right? So they do these things. And part of me wondered, because of this, if this was some sort of maybe tech that maybe we still don't understand because maybe it was destroyed, but it was some sort of tech to basically scare pirates.
Nothing scares a pirate.
Sorry, a pilot. To scare pilots. And it's just some technology that they had come up with, but
yeah,
it was
helium
up,
tanks and balloons.
It was just straight up
off.
some sort of, they were doing something, and it was nothing more than to distract and maybe intimidate pilots. That's kind of where my brain thought when we started going into the Nazi aspect.
Right.
So in the 1950s, there was an article that was printed in Andrew's favorite magazine, Der Spiegel, that mentioned a quote from Rudolf Schreiber.
We didn't clarify what the name of the magazine was. What was it?
Der Spiegel.
Der Spiegel.
Der Spiegel.
Der Spiegel.
Der Spiegel. What was the name of the article, Dan?
You're not talking about... Hold on.
Untertassenflieger combination.
Oh, Untertassenflieger.
Yeah. In Der Spiegel, 1950. Yeah.
That's a good article.
That's his good article.
I loved it.
The greatest article in all of the world.
Oh, Jack's back.
He's back. He's always here.
He's always here.
It's a combination of Untertassen and Fliegel.
Yeah, it's the Fliegel. You're talking about Jack's favorite magazine, Der Spiegel. So Jack is here for Der Spiegel.
His favorite magazine and his favorite article as well?
Yeah.
Der Spiegel.
Yes. What are the odds?
So Rudolf Schreiber, who was an engineer in Nazi Germany, said that he had actually worked with engineers who had experimented in the early 1940s with flying saucer craft. Not necessarily. I don't think there's no real indication that he mentioned that this was alien tech, but perhaps just, you know, earthly or just the designs of these saucer like craft. And he said that he had made actual blueprints for these machines, which one of them he referred to as a flying top. But he says that these blueprints were actually stolen right before Germany's collapse from his actual laboratory.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and then he made claims that this flying machine would be capable of speeds up to 2,600 miles per hour.
God,
and then they would have an operational radius of about 4,000 miles.
2,600 miles per hour? What Mach? That's got to be like Mach 2 or something.
It's like two, three almost. It's like 3. What is it? What's Mach 1? Like 760
speed
something?
Speed of sound. 343 meters per second. 761 miles per hour.
Yeah, 760. What did I say? 762.
Yeah,
761 something.
Oh, dude,
I talk that fast.
I'm faster than
dude, that. We're almost Mach 3 at the potential of that.
Yeah. No, nothing ever really like after that article. Nothing really pops up about Rudolf Schreiber. So I could kind of chalk that up to the fact that, you know, everybody was throwing, you know, 1940s, 1950s were just like the fucking Wild West of aviation.
What can we build or what can we
Or it's like you want to throw out everything you can to try and get government funding because everybody's heard about paperclip at this point, probably. Like, hey, we know they're picking up scientists.
Dan, are you?
U.S. government's throwing money at them and moving them to Texas.
Are you attacking the credibility of Der Spiegel? That is a fucking, that is primetime literature there, Der Spiegel.
Great journalism.
Yeah, they fact check. They know their shit.
How dare you?
Yeah,
how dare you? Sully the name of Der Spiegel.
Der Spiegel and Rudolf Schreiber.
Okay, so he loses.
You're going to get a combination of the Untertassen and the Fliegel.
So he says his blueprints were taken after the war.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean, like, the existence of UFO sightings continued all the way to now, like, to especially disc sightings.
So you have another perhaps plausible explanation, or perhaps another person who may have designed these craft, or somebody's designs who had come to fruition near the end of the war. Or you have Victor Schauberger.
Oh, I love Schauberger.
Yeah, I'm sure you love it.
I hate
beer break. We gotta open some beers.
I hate being in the studio with this guy.
Oh, you're so smelly.
Dude,
you can't smell yourself.
Listen, no.
No, you listen here, MJ Cheeks. Since you got your fucking nose job, you can shit yourself and not smell yourself. It's bullshit.
All right, we done?
No, we're not.
I want someone to roll back the tape. Roll back the tape.
It didn't smell, though.
Hey, no, you will watch Andrew.
Yeah, but it didn't smell. You said you looked at me and said, sorry.
He leaves. He goes,
yeah, for a quick one, because I'm healthy.
Nah,
it doesn't stink.
You're blaming your fart.
His farts smell
30
like
30 seconds earlier.
Listen, his farts smell like pep and cheds.
No.
All right? The guy's not healthy. He's eating fucking gas station subs and shit like that. Yeah, he is. He's not a healthy person.
Anyways, gross. Dan, continue.
What, did I clog your toilet too? Is that what the next thing you're saying?
Look at the rosacea on your face.
We'll get back to the clogging the toilet.
I look like Dopey the Dwarf right now with this fucking swollen nose.
Yeah, I wish you could smell yourself.
Right. I
Victor Schauberger was actually an Austrian naturalist who worked for the Nazis against his will in 1943. Now, his background as a forest warden is where he said that he developed an understanding of nature's workings, in which he wanted to apply the principles that nature has to a lot of its.
Yeah, that's the person I want to make aerospace engineering and you know, fucking airplanes. He's the
world's first holistic aerospace engineer.
Yeah, like, you know, oh yeah, I'm one with the forest. Let me make a fucking.
We're gonna lather this with essential oil before we light it.
Well, his philosophy on aerospace design was that. The way that we design jet engines, or this is the way I understand it, is the way that we understand, like, the way that we design propulsion systems was not in line with nature.
I think it, he said, like, man after every sentence.
Yeah. You know what I mean, man?
I would when I read this and I was like, what kind of qualifications? Because they're like, he's a self-made genius. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, this is the guy you put in charge to make these things? I'm like, that's like us hiring Snow Forest or whatever her name is
to build us a jet. You know, this guy's falling around fucking Grateful Dead and he's a deadhead.
Yeah. Like,
taking breaks.
To me, this is, I was like, but I guess this kind of speaks to where the Nazis were at this time. Like, they were really believers into this kind of,
well, they're thinking
weird, right? Man.
Well, they're thinking outside the box. And Dan was saying, like, our technology right now, like, our propulsion is not in line with nature. And the fact that, like, he was trying to develop like a, it's called like a vortex.
A prayer machine.
It's called like a torsion field.
Yeah.
And that's like in line with.
What's it in line with?
So a torsion field is like the Earth's magnetic field is a torsion field that emanates from the equator. It goes up to the poles and such. It's like a cyclical thing. So he's trying to say, like, cause this was in, did you ever watch? What was that fucking?
I didn't.
The gamble guy. He made this Thrive. The documentary is called Thrive, and they are explaining like a torsion engine, like a torsion field. So what he's saying is like he's trying to like emulate, because torsion fields not only Earth but like galaxies and the universe.
He's trying to mimic.
It's a very natural occurring thing in nature, the torsion field, and he was trying to, I guess, use it to develop some type of flight, like. Propulsion that when you could use it to lift off.
Holy. Hey, hold on. You know
the principles that he did use and the designs of.
Hold on, Dan. That's the longest Zell's ever talked without saying Graham Hancock or Younger Dries.
God damn it.
Time.
Get out of
here. He's going to bring it back. Head. He's going to bring it back.
What do you think?
I was like, that's true.
What do you think brought in the fucking comet at the Younger Dries? It was the torsion field. The torsion field. Of the solar system pulled in the Younger Dryas impact comet and subsequent thereafter at the older and oldest Dryas.
So there were claims that Schauberger had actually developed a type of vortex engine. Like his kind of designs really depended on, like Zell said, the production of these vortices or like these torsion fields to produce levitation. And then in some cases they said energy generation. So they would be capable both of motion and producing electricity.
Zero
so
point.
You could do that.
They referred to it in that documentary Thrive as zero point energy, like fully green, renewable, unlimited energy.
And so, like, in order to fly or apply this to flight, because I think they had applied this principle mostly, I think his designs applied mostly to sea craft. Like, he was more of kind of like developing specialized propellers and stuff for ships and to get ships to be able to move more efficiently through water. And then they thought to try to apply these principles to flight as well. And they thought perhaps they could use this vortex engine to utilize the friction between vortices and surrounding air to force air downwards and then creating an overall lift effect. Because it was basically, he took his design, which he had been using for ships, and mounting it horizontally to move a ship through the
water. Yeah, Andrew was using that same premise like a couple of
And then you would
ago.
Put it vertically. So it was just like, okay, what if we flip it over and instead we put it in an aircraft? Like,
So initially he made it for the individuals and now he wants to make it for the fucking space people.
Yes.
I'm picking up what you're putting down. I can figure
it's all summed connected. Up.
Amazing.
Bring back to the individual.
Broken down and summed up. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Incredible. There have been a few. I read a few papers that were published and a few of like engineering journals from Australia and stuff like this, where they had actually tested some of the the designs that Schauberger had for his engines. And the ones that actually they tested in the water, at least one or two tests actually seemed to indicate that they did produce more power, at least, or more propulsion, like at least to some extent of like 25% were some reports.
I didn't do
and being able to actually more efficiently move through the water. But when they try to apply it to lift, they're just like, it doesn't work. It's like you don't,
you'd have to mostly scale up the energy to a greater.
Well, right. But they said that mostly they only worked because of the principle, because of you're moving friction in water, in a liquid, like it can actually do it. Like that's the only way to do it. But they also said that like sudden changes in pressure and in heat or temperature could also affect these kinds of engines greatly. But, and then trying to put it in air, it's just like, you can't generate enough friction in air to utilize one of these to actually apply the principles.
You're going to crash. You're going to have a bad time, basically.
Well, you're not going to produce enough energy. You're not going to be able to produce enough lift to get the thing off the ground and moving through the air than you would in the water, where it's like the friction.
You're basically riding a lawnmower.
Okay. Yes, I guess.
This is where the ride a lawnmower was invented. They're like, fuck, this thing doesn't fly. And then they move it, and they're like, holy shit, it cut the grass. Fucking great, though. Boom. Listen, right now, I don't know where was the ride. It was if the riding lawnmower was made up in Germany. This is how this is.
The Germans did a lot of engineering. I wouldn't be surprised. This is history. I have to take a quick moment. Where was the lawnmower?
Cecily Pond. That's fucking Ron Pond's cousin.
Cecily Pond invented the ride on lawnmower.
Yeah, he's not fucking German.
Oh, England.
Oh, probably after. What year was it?
It was actually 46. He actually made it in 1830. So people have had a riding lawn. Never mind. It was a good
scrap
good
that.
Thought.
No, you blew it.
So
basically, hold on. Let me change my theory. They had a riding lawnmower, and the guy was like, what if you turned this thing up to like dialed it up to 100? Think it would take off? Basically.
Yeah. Checks out.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. One of the other aviation pioneers of Nazi Germany was Heinrich Fokker.
Fokker?
Fokker.
Fokker. Fokker.
Fokker, yeah.
He was the co-founder of Focke and Wulf Company, and they're best known for the inventing like the FW-61, Focke Wulf, and first successful German helicopter. So they were getting really big towards the end of the war. It's widely known that Germany was kind of having this kind of push towards VTOL aircraft or an interest in VTOL aircraft.
What is VTOL?
Yeah, I've no idea what VTOL is.
Is VTOL just like a helicopter VTOL technology?
VTOL, vertical takeoff.
That's what they say in Call of Duty. VTOL jet inbound.
Oh yeah, vertical takeoff. Yeah. OL.
Vertical takeoff and landing is VTOL.
Yeah, gotcha. It's like a Harrier jet would be considered a VTOL jet.
Yeah.
Right. Any aircraft that can take off.
Do exactly what that says.
Right. Twin it jet. Can vertically take off and then vertically land. And
it's a
helicarrier.
We're dummies over here.
A fucking plane helicarrier.
Was it B-22 Osprey?
Oh,
Dan, what was that plane?
The Thunderbolts.
What plane was in True Lies? Which one's Arnold flying? Because that one was like that.
That was a Harrier.
Yeah.
Was
it? Harrier.
Badass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but VTOL can record, like it doesn't necessarily have to have the same propulsion system. So there are different ways to that are VTOL aircraft. So you have ones that are like the Harrier. They have like a type of it's thrust vectoring or whatever, where they kind of angle the thrust from the jet down, and then it carries them up, or the exhaust, they angle it down, that lifts them up, and then they shift it back or whatever. Right. And then you have VTOL aircraft like that use propellers that use the your V-22 Ospreys, your helicopters, like those are technically VTOL as well.
VTOLs.
And so one of the craft that Focke had been designing or working on was known as the Focke Rockin.
Focke Rockin!
The Focke Rockin, don't come a knocking.
And if you look this one up, the Focke Rockin was, it's a pretty rad looking thing. Like, it's a pretty rad concept for an aircraft.
Better be with that fucking name.
Yeah, it's got a fucking rocking name.
It's got the cockpit at the front, pretty much. It's like, it's an angular, pretty much a saucer, a little bit like a Delta shape, a little bit rounded towards, pointed towards where the cockpit is, but towards the back. It has a large, like, horizontally mounted, like, thruster in the middle. It's just like a big propeller in the middle. And then this would be allow the craft, on the bottom of the craft, there's basically just a bunch of slats. And then these would be, they like open them up, and then you would vector the thrust down from the giant propeller, and then it would take off vertically. And then once you wanted to go forward, you would close those slats, and then you could go ahead and you angle.
Well, you would crash, Dan. What would happen if you were fock rocking?
Well, no, because you would actually angle the thrust like backwards. So as you move the slats, like the thrust would angle you forwards and up,
yeah.
And then you would kind of push these. There would be these a rearward series of
levers
like
and pulleys.
Afterburners, essentially, like these exhausts on the back, which are kind of like tiny little jets, and then they would just push it forward.
All this to cut some grass. Off. Like, what's the fucking point? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's like the design is revolutionary for the time. It's super cool. It's like a super neat little looking thing. But you know, I don't think it ever actually made it to it made it to the design phase, but it didn't make it to the production phase. I don't think they actually made any. But if they did, you know, that's a possible explanation for what these pilots were seeing. This is one of the things that you'll see applied there.
Right. So as some of the possible futuristic tech that could be explained as the Foo Fighters.
Right. I mean, these things that we see is that it kind of gives you evidence to support the Nazis were developing aircraft that were not familiar or worked in ways that we were not familiar with up to that point. Like they were experimenting with revolutionary ideas
Nazis,
in aeronautics design.
Right.
The Nazis weren't the only ones.
No, they were not. But just before we tell you about that one, Dan, I got another confession to make. I need a beer.
Beer break.
Beer break.
Well, I got another confession to make!
Oh, we'll be right back.
Fighters.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hi, I'm Eric.
And I'm Mark, and we're the hosts of Lorehammer, a Warhammer 40k podcast.
Are you tired of constantly being probed by the Greys? For information, of course.
Sick of the reptilians spending your tax dollars on their underground cities' roads?
And as for our benevolent space brothers, the Nordic aliens, with their tall bodies and their perfectly cut blonde hair, their blue eyes glistening in the sun, their muscles...
Whoa, Eric, that's
rippling.
Enough. Oh. Keep it together.
Well, if you're not turned away yet, you should head over to Lorehammer and check out the wonderfully horrific world of Warhammer 40k.
It's chock full of hundreds of alien species, a galaxy full of conflict and never-ending war.
So if you're sick of being taken advantage of by aliens, join us as we talk about humanity kicking ass and grinding up xeno-civilizations, then shooting their remains into the sun.
The xenos' only crime? Existence. So that's fun.
In each episode, we try to take a singular topic in the universe and regurgitate it in an easy-to-digest manner.
Yeah, we're gonna mama bird you.
So prepare yourself for hours of nonsensical talk, stupid and pedantic arguments about things that aren't even real, and let's not ever forget many, many, many alien species.
You can find Lorehammer on Spotify and follow our socials. And remember, in the grim darkness of the far future, there are only two types of aliens. Ones that are dead.
And ones that are about to be dead.
Do it. Do it. We're back.
We're back. There's like, there's always this weird, or not weird, but it always seems to be like the most popularized theory that the, or popularized view that the Nazis were way ahead of everybody in terms of like aviation design and aeronautic design.
Nah.
Well, they were in some regards, but.
In rocketry. Those things, maybe jet propulsion, things like that. But. Not by much.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's probably jet propulsion, very advanced, not so much.
Elite population of people that could become
very elite,
like, really
the best,
elite,
the best, sir.
Yeah.
Like the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be.
Very courteous, very intelligent.
Good
country.
Fuck a boot, fine dude.
Yeah. Fuck a boot, bud.
So yeah, the British. The and the Canadians. We're also working with jet propulsion systems as well.
Let's not celebrate too quickly on it, though.
Not only jet propulsion systems, but also they were also experimenting with saucer craft.
Flying saucers.
One of those, the most well known perhaps, is the Avro Canada VZ9 Avro car.
I know we've talked about this fucking thing before, and it definitely didn't fly. Well, it hovered, maybe.
I think it got off the ground a little bit, but.
Yeah. But there's
the first Avro car actually rolled out of the factory in 1959. And pretty much from June to October of 1959, it was tested in a static hover rig. So it's like they tested these aircraft to try to get them going. There's a whole big story, and we'll do it on a confidential or something to talk about Avro, maybe just the company Avro in general.
Well, hey, at one point, not a lot of people know this, but they designed an airplane at the time called the Avro Aero that was literally the greatest plane ever made, that outperformed every plane in existence, was decades ahead of their time, and they went, this is too powerful. They crashed it into fucking Lake Superior or some shit and burned all the plants.
They dropped the prototypes in the lake, got rid of it. Canada said, yeah, it's too good, eh?
Yeah.
World doesn't need this.
We can't have this falling into the wrong hands, eh?
Before that, though, they had these Avro cars, which apparently couldn't get more than 3 feet off the ground. No. And pretty much any higher than that,
they're unstable.
You would die.
Yeah. Easy. You couldn't keep it flat. You couldn't go anywhere. Machinery. It was just,
good for a beer run. Great. Right?
Basically, with the Avro Aero, they mixed this with a Canadian goose. And it became the best plane of all time.
But if you're watching live stream mode, I'll show you a quick picture of it. It's a really cool looking prototype, though.
You were in a flying saucer, like that's what it would be. You'd have your turbine in the middle, like spin it up, and then thrust vector down, and then it would create lift. I don't know how you would get it necessarily up in the air because I don't know how that would necessarily perform.
Well, it didn't perform that well. And they're asking, why does it say U.S. Air Force on it? Is because it was by commission of the United States, but built by Avro.
U.S. paid for it, but it was built in
Canada.
That makes sense.
Genius engineers and metal workers of Canada.
Of our best naturalists.
Yeah. For holistic.
We had a game. We used a game warden. We used a BC game warden as lead.
It runs
lead
off
on
maple
that
syrup.
Yeah. Good.
A lot of energy in maple syrup.
Yeah. Okay.
I think they're missing out.
So you have these actual flying saucer craft, but when you talk about Foo Fighters and you look at the actual descriptions of what like Foo Fighters are described as or seen as, like we said before, these are professional pilots. If they saw something saucer shaped, they probably would have said
saucer shaped.
Saucer shaped. They wouldn't have said this is some type of light or
is it the Great Balls of Fire? Is that where that song comes from?
Goodness gracious, Great Balls of Fire! Maybe.
I don't think so. Maybe.
Oh.
Can't confirm that one, but
fucking can't confirm.
Maybe I'm just putting that Jerry together because it was with Top that? Gun.
Is it Jerry Lee Lewis? I'm pretty sure it's Jerry Lee Lewis.
I think it's Jerry Lee Lewis.
Guy that's dating his fucking cousin or something, or is something weird.
Second cousin?
No, like first. Like
right. Greasy. No, so the theories on the Foo Fighters, everyone says like, okay, they were advanced craft, like prototype craft, either like the Nazis were developing them, or maybe the Nazi pilots who also seen them thought maybe the Allies were developing them.
That's a good point that you brought up that we hadn't talked about yet, is that at the same time, you're having like Japanese fighters and Nazi fighters saying the same thing. So you, on the Axis side, they're going, is this some sort of ally? Like, do the Allies have some sort of
tech,
craft or tech that we don't know about? And then I find it very peculiar that everyone was trying to build saucers at this time, right?
Mm.
Right? Is it one of those things where maybe you're both parties are seeing these things and going, we've seen it in the air. We've seen it maneuver, right? It's outmaneuvering, it's vanishing. Like, can we replicate it? Can we match what it's doing?
I feel like I should know this because we've talked about this shit for like so many times. Why a saucer? Is it more aerodynamic? Like, what the fuck is it about this saucer shape that has everybody trying to make one?
Well, these saucers we were talking about, we now found out, vertical takeoff craft. They're run on like turbines and stuff, and they're pushing air. But the actual ET saucers that have been seen and, you know, theorized about are actually using like anti-gravitic. They're like either distorting gravity or reversing gravity or something like that. And the craft is supposed to be, that shape of craft is like, who was the German guy who was talking about the torsion fields?
Oh,
like a Schauberger?
Yeah.
In the Der Spiegel?
In the Der Spiegel, yes.
You're talking about Der Spiegel? Yes.
I think that's Rudolf Schriever.
Schriever.
In the Der Spiegel.
Yeah, when he was talking about the...
It says he was talking about the Fokker too in the Der Spiegel?
No, he was talking about the Untertassen Flieger.
In the combination, in the thing, in the combination of the two. In the place.
But
I know it.
In those type of craft, like theoretically, they're using like a different type of physics, like the torsion field, and the craft, the saucer shape, it seems to be the way to emulate it, I guess, is the theory.
It's holistic.
Yeah. One of the more fantastic theories that comes out of this kind of whole thing is the idea of like, if it's flying saucer craft, there's always this mention of the Vril discs.
Ooh.
Now, the Vril is like a fictional race of people. Or
the Vril Society.
Supposedly. The Vril Society, which is also a thing, kind of, or supposedly a thing, some side of a cult society within Nazi Germany, or popularized during the 1930s and such. But there was a novel actually written by one Edward Bulwer Lytton called The Coming Race. And it was basically Jules Verne's Journey to the Center of the Earth, except in the center of the Earth, instead of having dinosaurs and shit, it's going to be a fucking advanced Nordic race of aliens that use a energy source known as Vril to do everything. It's
their fossil fuel is what you're saying.
It's arcana, it's mana, it's the force, it's everything. It's basically that placeholder thing in a fantasy novel.
Like,
this is how magic works. It's magic, not magic.
Midichlorians. Mitochondria is a real thing.
That's the powerhouse of the cell.
Yes, you're right. Good job.
Boom.
And it's sometimes theories that perhaps, like, you know, this Vril thing was not so much a fictional novel as it was perhaps like the Nazis had some sort of contact with extraterrestrials and they had gleaned some type of knowledge which gave them an idea of how to use anti-gravity to propel or as a propulsion system for some of their craft. It's often mentioned, usually alongside, I see it a lot of times with mercury or red mercury, specifically red mercury. So that kind of always flies around with the thing. There are forms technically of red mercury, but they don't really, there's like, is it mercury sulfide and like mercury oxide, I think, which are
is this where it's like mercury's in a sphere and you get the gyroscopic spinning and then when it spins, it lights up and it floats?
As far as I know, and then while I was researching this and looking it up, mercury doesn't, in its natural, you know, liquid form or whatever, in room temperature, it doesn't have any really extraordinary electromagnetic properties that you would expect. It doesn't really
run a current through it.
It is notable that when you chill it to like 4 degrees below Kelvin, like -4 Kelvin, which is like 477 degrees, -477 degrees Celsius or something like that.
No, really cold. Because it's an absolute zero, like minus 270 or something.
Yeah. Well, if you get it super cold, it becomes a superconductor, which is pretty neat. But once it gets above that temperature, then it just becomes normal.
So is that the temperature that Mercury freezes? Is that cold or something?
It's really, really cold. It's just when it gets that cold, it has a lot of interesting electromagnetic properties where it becomes a superconductor. It can also become a perfect magnet, they said. Like once you apply a charge to it, it keeps that charge, whether it's positive or negative.
You know what? I just got to say, like whenever we start talking about things like this and Mercury and getting these weird, I just always pops into my head that like all these times we talk about ancient civilizations and they have like these weird Mercury pools. And stuff, and I'm like, why were they like so fascinated with it too? And it's like, because maybe they knew
they seen something
and knew, just didn't know how to harness it yet, right? And they were collecting it,
right? You know, or Mercury just looks cool, yeah. And like at room temperature, it's metal, but it's also a liquid. Like,
and they didn't know it was super poisonous, so
yeah, they also didn't know it was super poisonous, so you know. So that's one of the ideas. You have the red mercury kind of thing that pops around in some things. There's not necessarily any scientific proof that mercury has any type of special qualities, especially these things. If you're rotating it or producing heat or if you're trying to base a system on this, it would seem kind of like wouldn't seem very practical. Because you have to, even if you're like, okay, well, what if they super cooled it? I'm like, I don't think Nazis had tech to keep. It would be impractical to try to keep mercury at that temperature while you're trying to fly. Yeah,
there's no way somehow. They had like freezers that could be that efficient to freeze something that
and,
cold.
And the thing is, if it gets slightly above the temperature that it, you know, that slightly above that minus 4 Kelvin, the heat exponentially rises because of the friction of like the photons or whatever moving through it. Like it just compounds super fast.
Yeah.
So then it would lose all of its charge and then you're kind of gone. SOL. So I don't know. There's that kind of whole thing, which is like, okay, if they had real discs that try an anti-gravity, it's like, you'd have to have some type of system to support that. I suppose that's one of the theories that kind of floats around with the idea of these Foo Fighters.
Or maybe those real discs, like, because this is kind of coming from science fiction. Maybe if it does come from, you know, a real thing, maybe there is like an actual real thing. Maybe whoever seen the craft just didn't really understand and just made up something they thought sounded cool. And maybe the actual workings of the actual real craft are much more, you know, understandable. If someone just like show you, they're not like, we don't have to chill this mercury to minus 270. This is actually how it works. But the guy, whoever, if they seen the craft or whatever it is and how that goes the story, maybe he just, you know, he added that little sci-fi to it.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of sci-fi, like pretty much the idea of Nazi UFOs is like well established in science fiction. Like it is always there, and it's been there for a long time. Like it's always kind of a thing. And I guarantee that the first thing you would pop into your head when you think of Nazi UFOs is if you can look it up. I told Zell earlier, it's like it's what was titled or named the Hanubu, like the Hanubu 2 craft. Two.
It's awesome. It's a toy too by Revel.
Yeah.
That's a model.
If you're watching the live stream, that's like the classic, the Nazi flying saucer one.
Fucking dude, look at machine guns. Looks like a bell too.
It's got a bell. It's got the little bell shape to it.
Yeah. Right, maybe that was De Glocka.
De Glocka, right?
Yeah, De Glocka. But look at that thing, man! Turrets on all sides, like
dude. That looks like something fucking. It's missing a cobra fucking sign on it. Like it should be fighting G.I. Joes.
Yeah, exactly. The thing about
it should be fighting Decepticons, because that is the design that they used for Cosmos in the Transformers line. I remember that one. Like I remember that UFO, and I remember that Transformer Cosmos, because he looked like that shit. Which he was apparently based off of that design that was made popular by George Adamski, who was a UFO, big UFO to do in like the 50s and 40s and 40s, 50s. Big dude. But if you watched Iron Sky, like if you watched
I didn't
movie,
watch
like,
it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what you get is this idea that there is these you know, Nazi UFOs, that these Nazi, that the Nazis had access to some type of alien technology that helped them build these craft or something like that. But I don't know. Like, even that thing, it's like, even if you look at that, if you look at that and you were like, okay, that's the kind of craft that they were fielding at the time. Does that look like a Foo Fighter?
No.
From like descriptions, could that possibly be a Foo Fighter from the descriptions that you guys read or that you guys looked at?
No. I mean, there's all these are craft that should be easily visible in the sky if they were flying only 100 feet or 100 yards from you. Not a just a glowing orange ball.
One of the best explanations, and I don't know whether this is actually plausible, and I can't tell if the dude is totally serious, is there was an explanation put forth by Renato Vesco called the Führer ball.
Yes.
Which is German for fireball.
It's basically like an NBA jam when he's on fire. Just Hitler throwing
his
basketballs.
I believe you roll 5d8s for damage.
Yeah.
Right. Of course. Yeah, but for flak damage, because apparently this thing was what he claimed was a ground-launched, automatically guided, jet-propelled flak mine.
Dope.
That you could launch into the air, and then it would fly around, and it would like lock on or avoid enemy fire. It had all kinds of crazy properties that this guy said, but it flew by a means of like gas jets that spun. The description was like a Catherine wheel. If you've ever seen one of those fucking like whistling disky,
that's what I was thinking in my head. Dixies, is that what it is?
Fireworks. Like that's how it flew, or Gamera, like kind of like Gamera, the fucking turtle. Like it just like spins in a circle and you launch it. I see how this would possibly be practical.
Well, you
when they describe it, I'm like, there's no way this would fucking work.
So wait, they launch it up. It's spinning. It's a mine. So it has to be triggered by an aircraft, or like, would it just explode after like a time delay?
Like it would like find craft. I don't know. I would assume it would have to have some sort of like magnetic charge. It would like limp it onto a plane or something and then explode. But there's no reports of this ever happening.
No.
But they're saying that perhaps like these were that's what these things were. And maybe not necessarily to blow up planes, but technically like disable them. There's some descriptions that kind of, or some people theorize that there is this inside of these things, they had some type of like electromagnetic disruption devices that would try that would disrupt communications or something between planes and like ground control.
Holy fuck.
And that's what they were supposed to do.
This is a fucking jack of all trades.
Did they know the effects of EMP? Because they were just starting to light off atomic bombs?
We would hear about all their apparatuses.
Electrical storms and things interfere with radio.
Yeah, I guess.
With radio. So it's like they knew that there was
That's a lot of energy in those electrical storms compared to like one mine exploding.
Well, it's not exploding. It would just like had some type of like electrical field device. Like it'd have electrical, it would generate some type of electrical field that would disrupt communications like in a short distance or something like that. That's the explanation put forth by that author. And it sounds pretty wild.
I mean, that is the closest thing to what they witnessed, though, like a small glowing orb, which maybe that could have been if that was like a real device. Because all the other ones are craft size, so like big saucers, not like a small glowing orb. So this, like, I guess it's kind of like a drone in a way, but not really a drone because it's not controlled.
Yeah, it's ludicrous in my mind. Fucking do all, does everything.
Okay, so we got
the Führer ball.
We got the Führer ball. We got all these other craft that could have been
a fucker wolf.
That could have been
Führer Spiegel. We have Der Spiegel.
Der Spiegel.
He wants the Der Spiegel.
Well, you know, I still like to think that, you know, perhaps the Nazis did have some sort of technology like this, because the sightings of the Foo Fighters, basically stop at the end of the war. Like as soon as the Allies start to take over Germany and stuff, sightings of Foo Fighters stops. What I think it could be one possibility, and it's I don't have all my chips in this one. I just, when I've been going through it and thinking about it, this is what I think could be a possibility, is that they did have some sort of deterrent technology that was just up there, to, like I said earlier, to, you know, scare these pilots. And when it was looking grim for the Nazis, I believe that they destroyed the technology and all the plans. And then people are like, well, something would be saved. It's like, well, in today's, like later in time, Canadians made the Avro Arrow. They've destroyed this. We still can't make that. We still have no idea what the plans are. Literally everything was destroyed. So it's like when people say, well, something would have got out. I was like, well, stuff didn't get out from the Avro Arrow and there was no war. A company just was like, we don't want it.
What about destroy all the it scientists that were fucking kidnapped?
Yeah, but let's say it was. Let's say America. This technology was compartmentalized, right?
Like the way the Russians do it.
Yeah, where so it's like, you know, one person was working on something, but no one has a whole piece of the pie.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe it was something like that. That's kind of where like my first thought went to.
But what's the tech then? Like a glowing orb that doesn't attack; it just follows. It
was heat-seeking swamp gas.
Stole my joke.
They harnessed St. Elmo's fire.
I did. I was 100%.
Such a fucking
joke today.
Stealer, I said it. I said it earlier today, and he went, "Ha, that's pretty good."
Guys, you know, fucking career on it, man.
That's for. I went. That's.
You good. Know what? At least he didn't just yell it louder than you did when you said it.
Heat speaking swamp gas. No, but if say they did it, so that would make sense if it was, if it say it was Nazi tech that wasn't quite developed and these glowing orbs were just there as like deterrents, like, oh, let's put, we don't have the capabilities to attach weapons to them yet, but let's put them up there and maybe we can tail them, scare them a little bit. Maybe they think we'll have something, we have something more, maybe make them worried a little bit. Cause at this time of the war, like the Allies are taking over the skies, right?
Yeah.
They're bombing all of fucking Germany. They're leveling like every major city and production facility. So if it was like a, some of like small, that's in my mind, I was like, it seems drone size, right? Doesn't seem like a pilot was in it.
So there was no description that like this was big. Like I never saw that. It was like, there was many, there was around, they were beside the wing. So I imagine like, relative to the planes they were in, these things were smaller in size.
Yeah,
in my mind.
So yeah, if there was lost tech, it wouldn't have been a disc. It would have been something that we just don't know about. Whatever, yeah. It got bombed or destroyed, and she gone forever. But what? Let's move on to some other theories, because there is the main one we got to talk about. It's always atmospheric phenomenon of some type with these type of sightings, like some glowing orb. So what could that be?
So one of the explanations put forth, I think, was that these could perhaps be a type of static discharge that were actually pretty prevalent or actually pretty common with airplanes of that day. If you've ever flown in a plane and you've looked out on the wing, or you've gotten to sit, you've been lucky enough to sit on the
there's someone on the window seat.
If you look out on the wing, you'll sometimes see these tiny little like kind of wires, gremlins. Like these little kind of sticks that stick out from the planes. These are actually called static wicks, which are actually installed in order to like mitigate the buildup of static electricity that planes get while flying through the air. If you look up videos of it, you can see it now, it does occasionally happen, especially I watched some videos of a space shuttle reentry, and when they're just burning through the atmosphere, all the static electricity that builds up, you'll see lightning bolts and things and just tiny specks of green light and things like flying past the windows.
Yeah, it's because they're flying way too close to Mount Olympus. Right. Zeus is like, no, fuck off, man.
Yeah. And you see, and they said it's actually a really, it happens a lot. It's a lot more common in snowy conditions, which is
more which friction. Makes sense. Yeah.
You have a lot more friction in the air and things like that. But that technology of these static dischargers, that didn't actually become popular until the building of the B-29, which was towards the end of the war. Mm-hmm. They didn't actually install them on any other planes. I think the B-29 was one of the first planes to actually be built with those actual things. So that's one of the explanations that perhaps some of these, maybe not all of them, could actually be attributed to these atmospheric phenomenon, like just static electricity building up in the...
They call it, the phenomenon is called St. Elmo's fire.
Right. That's also, like,
it comes off. It come off like the nose of the plane or the tips of the wings.
Not a chance.
But it
wouldn't be shaped in a ball, though.
That's what I mean. We looked some of it up, and there is a lot of video of it, and it looks like lightning off the wing.
I would never ever describe the video footage of St. Elmo's fire that I've seen as Foo Fighters.
As Foo.
Mm-hmm. Never.
That's fair.
It's completely like I would go like when I was watching all the videos we watched and the cockpit videos, I went, that's some sort of lightning. That's what there's some sort of electrical something going on. I didn't go, oh, are those Foo Fighters?
Tallying it up.
But like there's not a chance in my head.
It could maybe happen. I could say you could, you know, some maybe that phenomenon up to some weird sightings. Like you look to your left, you see the spark off the wing, and maybe the conditions are just right, and it, you know, leaves like a, you know, it looks like an orb for a second. But I don't think you can't do it to all of these because you're on different sides of the planet, you know, different regions. It's
different
not,
cultures, different sides of the war. Like,
yeah. So
and it's a very similar description of that ball, that orange ball, the fireball, right?
Orange or green.
Lightning. You don't go. I've never gone and into a thunderstorm and seen lightning and gone, wow, look at that fireball. Did you guys see that fireball? It's like, no, that was lightning. They knew what lightning was in fucking the 1920s and 30s.
See that? Oh, there's the lightning strike.
40s. There's
a lightning ball that just followed up in the sky for, you know,
the thing that stands out the most to me, like that jumped out, is the fact that they were followed for long periods of time, and it was mimicking all their moves with such precision, and wouldn't leave until they would like do some type of evasive maneuver. And you got to think, like in my head, I'm like, these people are going through; they're in a complete state of hypervigilance. Right, like this is probably the most stressed out that they've ever been. They're fucking fatigued. They're getting exhausted. Shot at.
They're being fired by a fucking firebolt.
Well, like I said, like fucking legitimately hypervigilance. They're on their game. Some of them are even on fucking street drugs. Some of them are on meth, for fuck's sakes. And it makes me wonder, like, you know, what if it was even just something as simple as fucking like reflections off the cockpit? And the fact that these stories are traveling and they're telling each other, like, oh, I think I saw something. And then you're fucking in there, you know, Kenny Loggins is playing. You're on the highway to the fucking danger zone and you're seeing
he's playing 40 years before,
yes. 40 years before the song was written.
You know, and you're fucking fired up.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Well, here's the thing though.
Think about all the, like, look at the light sources. You got sun, moon, ground sources, instrument panels.
But for every explanation from one of the fighter pilots saying that it followed me through evasive maneuvers, there's another one saying I got away from it using evasive maneuvers. Right, so it's like you have some people that evasive maneuvers work.
You lose a light source after you fucking go and you fuck around.
And some people didn't. Some it kept.
I just don't understand.
Venus was the light of Venus was just fucking tailing them around through the sky. They're like, oh shit, I can't. There's Venus.
Any type of fucking reflection, and then it just doesn't make any sense. Like, why tail? Why not do anything, and then why just disappear? Like, none of that makes any fucking sense. Why would a fucking ship or saucer that has the ability to do something that nobody else can fucking comprehend at this point in time give a fuck about a shitty airplane?
Galactic,
that
they're like,
this is nothing. This is nothing to me. This is archaic fucking technology.
We're at the peak of human conflict. If you were an ET species, scientifically observing the planet, let's just hypothetical. If you've been watching this whole time, you've seen wars and you've seen people die, and then you get to World War II. Well, World War I first probably triggered, like, holy guys, they're using ancient fighting techniques, lining up in lines where machine guns mow them down. This is fucking crazy. And then World War II comes along and you're like, okay, these monkeys haven't learned their lesson. Now they're just making bigger, more badass weapons, killing each other faster. Maybe we should just, you know, maybe they're on the cusp of, you know, joining.
Maybe we should
be dangerous. And
put
then,
out fireballs and just follow them around for a little bit and then decide to leave.
And then after the atomic bombs drop, the war is over, and the Foo Fighters disappear. It's like they're like, okay, we know what they can do. Let's go back to our mothership and analyze. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's war's over, so there's no more fucking fighter jets with messed up pilots.
So, Andrew, what you're saying is, Andrew, with yours is like the common, like between the stress, maybe this was like some sort of group hallucination.
I think it's hypervigilance,
PTSD,
stress.
Like,
not PTSD, like hypervigilance, like the fact that you're always on, you're ready for something at all times. So when you see something, you automatically assume it's something.
Right. We got to talk about one more atmospheric phenomenon before moving on, and that's ball lightning.
I feel like we've talked about this every UFO case.
For me, I'm like,
It's the
every
only
description of ball lightning you hear. It's like the slow rolling, moving. Like it doesn't make intelligent maneuvers.
No, it does not.
Right. So it's like, to me, I was like, the second people were trying to explain this off is like, well, they just didn't know about ball lightning back then. I'm like, ball lightning's not fucking orange. Right? Like, it's never been described as orange anywhere else. Well, like,
it's never really been documented in video, so they don't really know exactly. It could be multiple colors.
It's also, yeah, it's also not very well understood still. Like, yeah. It's very, because it's so.
It's like a fucking excuse.
It's like
literally like
lightning. It's like, it's plasma. The plasma, like, it's trapped in a ball, they say, and it can float, linger in the atmosphere if conditions are right, but they don't really know, like, well, what charge is in the ball? Like, would it vaporize you if it touched you? Like, how does it go through? Because there's accounts of like it enters a plane and it goes down the aisle. But I mean, we don't really know anything about it. But that's the only thing, phenomena that floats in an orb like that. But if it's that high voltage, you think of it, it might zap some people if you got too close to it in a plane or something. But
well, okay, I got a little bit of an outlandish one.
Perfect.
All right.
Let's move on from atmosphere to outlandish.
This is a futuristic Disney ride. Hear me out. Hear me out.
What?
This is the Foo Fighters are a futuristic Disney ride called Travel Through History. Opens in like year fucking 2330 at Disney Parks. Real. Then they're just like, we really take you to the battles in the skies of World War II. And you
virtual
fucking,
reality?
Virtual reality. And you just fucking cruise and what the people. Flying the planes experience was just, you know, ball of fire. But really, it was like fucking eyes of Sauron peering through time and space.
So you're in 2300 Disney World.
Yeah.
You, instead of going to like the simulator, you step in, you put the goggles on.
Yeah, it's not the Star Wars ride.
Small world. You're going on this fucking cool world.
And like, you know how it's like the evasive. It's like you track the evasive maneuvers. The ride's like, wow, wow, wow. And then other times you're like, now we're going to go to this place in history.
Just
like
tormenting your great, 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 great grandfather. Yeah. Fuck.
Right?
So this transports you back in time in this orb and you're witnessing.
Dude, it's a perfect idea because it works in the time travel dynamic in that it's happened. So it doesn't matter if it's happened because like, do you know what I mean? Like it's in the flow of time now.
Oh, I know what you mean.
That if 2333 comes and they open a glimpse into the glimpse in history, the new Disney ride at Orlando in Orlando on the moon and right
the Orlando
they go back
Basin,
they're not the changing mirror. Anything because we know about the Foo Fighters.
Okay,
that's the only way. That's it.
Lunar
cracked.
Disneyland,
consider it cracked.
Disney
done.
Again.
Gotcha. So we got,
you're welcome,
we got atmospheric phenomenon, we got pilot misconception or error due to stress or whatever in the sky, you can see stuff wrong.
Yeah.
You got futuristic Disneyland coming back, time traveling, witnessing ancient tech. Like, check this out, kids. Yeah. This is going to be awesome. We've talked about a potential ally or axis, like wonder weapon, like new craft, but it doesn't really make sense because it's not an orb that's glowing.
Again, I just got to say, I find it very peculiar that both sides of the war were trying to make saucers. Right?
Yeah.
Like that's,
yeah, I agree.
That
I
to
agree.
Me, I'm like, right there is like,
they seen something.
They both sides seen something, thought it was the other side, were trying to mimic it. Right?
Maybe both sides, the ETs observing our planet.
I gotta go to Petrie really quick.
Oh, he couldn't hold on.
Wow.
Shame. So, the last one we gotta talk about is ET, UFO. What and why? So if it isn't like an ET orb, is it an orb? Because some people, like we always talk about, like the orbs are representing like from something from a different dimension, and it just takes that form of energy. Or it's a glowing, a small. The ETs are just real small. Like this was a little gray and a little orb. It's like a little scout ship. They're just tracking our movements. Or what would it be?
I mean, they do fit inside people's heads. Right, and they control the body.
According to Tim Burton.
Yep. Men in Black is what I was thinking of.
That's me too.
What's the little alien dude?
Yeah, that was directed by Tim Burton.
Men in Black was directed Tim.
What?
What? I'm
sure.
No way.
You could be right.
No way. No, I'm not.
Or am I thinking Daniel?
You're dreaming. That's not a thing.
I can fact check that real quick, but I don't know my director, so I'm not waiting on this one.
Tim Burton. No way.
But what else? What? Why other? Like, what else? What else? If it's not an ET and it's not all, any of these things, is it some unknown phenomenon? Or if it's an ET, why would they just be following? Just checking out our tech?
Oh, sorry. It was Barry. Is that Barry Sonnenfeld? Coming in by?
Shoot, I'm not Googling right now. I'm just trying to figure out what this little...
It's easy for you to say.
What's up?
It's easy for you to say.
What'd you find out?
I don't know. I'm just pulling up all these dumb Men in Black ones, like the fucking Men in Black 6.
No, she's Google
Men. No, it was directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, my bad.
Barry Sonnenfeld.
I think it's because I thought that the score...
Same director as Wild Wild West.
All right, 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 right.
Wild Adam's Wild Family, West.
That's a good one, though.
Going to the Wild Wild West.
Wild Wild West. Jim West. Desperado. Rough stuff. Nah, you don't want none of this.
Okay, any other thoughts or theories on what it could be? And we'll give some quick conclusions and we'll wrap this case file up.
No.
Now, like, we give what we actually believe?
You did. You said it already. Disneyland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, good. Disney's head and the little spider legs.
Yeah. Welcome, kids, as the head turns around in the glass jar. Yeah. We're going to travel through history.
Conclusions then? Andrew, what do you think?
I so badly want to believe it's some type of fucking ancient Nazi super weapon.
Ancient Nazi?
Well, the 1940s is ancient now, isn't it?
I guess.
Can we consider it?
Maybe. Well,
we got to think. What are you looking at? These pilots who are trained pilots. Yeah, we're up there seeing every day.
They're not. They're going through crash courses to put fucking asses in seats,
right?
And or they're fucking flying.
People, some boots on the ground, some fucking pants of pushers who are like, "Hey, listen, it's St. Elmo's fire. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. How you doing?
Keep it moving. Don't worry about it. Eh?
Next. Who's up?
No, but seriously. I really want it to be some type of like crazy Nazi weapon, but it's not.
And what is it?
It's fucking...
They've seen something in their rearview mirror?
Vigilance, seeing reflections and people hearing stories at the fucking...
The Foo Fighters?
The pubs. And the fucking lore of the Foo Fighters spreads. These guys want to see something. They're fucking...
So it's all mass hysteria. You're saying mass hysteria.
I just don't understand why nothing came of it. You know? Unless maybe one of these got shot down and they weren't reported.
We still have no official explanation from the U.S. government.
And that's why it's...
Or any government, for that matter.
Yeah, I don't know. I just... Believe me, I want to think of something cool. And I got it.
The Nazis are still quiet on the matter. We haven't heard...
They're under the ice, baby. Everyone knows this.
It's true. I don't believe that all these people, because it'd be different if it was like just the American fighter pilots, but it's not. It's literally like almost every person that had planes in the air has some story in that time about the Foo Fighters.
I don't know. I only got a fucking few, and then I got the beautiful article in Der Spiegel. Like, I don't have that many. I don't really know.
It's because you researched for 45 minutes before you came.
Yeah, well, somebody's got to work. I didn't get to go on fucking... I didn't go get cosmetic surgery so I could take some time off here, MJ. All right?
MJ.
Stay with the fucking Jackson 4 here.
I definitely
do your
think
own thing.
That... Well, gee, you try to be number one somewhere.
Going for conclusion number two from Braden.
Sympathy votes here.
But that's what I think that it's... There was something in the skies.
Something in the skies.
Fire in the skies. Unexplainable.
Dan, what do you think?
I'm on Team Andrew. I'd be like, it's some type of atmospheric combination perhaps of like atmospheric phenomena that could possibly be electrical related, something like that.
That only happens during war.
Or in the Zeus.
But with the stories that we do have, like there are other stories as recent as like 2020, like there people see these things in the sky. Like it's not necessarily just orbs. Have to be associated.
Like the fucking Japanese one we just did.
They don't just stop after the war. There are people who still see these things.
Not Utsurabune, the other one. One before that, the other Japanese one. What was that one, Dan?
You're talking about flight, was it 69?
Yeah. Right.
That's true,
The last flight. There are other pilots that do
was a mothership
report
the size
these
of a starship.
Or don't huge. Report these, but there's like I said, I think the like the one American Legion interview kind of said with some of the pilots is like they don't report everything that they see. If they reported every weird thing that they saw, they'd never get to fly. They would just be stuck. I could get on board with alien aircraft or some type of alien probe if the fact was, like, during the Cold War, we were using satellites to pretty accurately detail movements and things of stuff like that. And that's just with our technology at the time in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Like, if you have a civilization that's so advanced that they can cross the vast distances between stars and galaxies and whatever like that, I would assume that they would be able to observe us without even being much of a, at all, like having any impact on what we are, especially if they're following some type of like prime directive, like rule where they, of non-interference or whatever. It would be, it would seem a lot more plausible for them to just like sit back from wherever, like behind the moon or something. And then just observe us from there. But
maybe their aerospace technology is through the roof. Their telescopic technology is terrible.
What? But then it's like, ask yourself, how would you be able to navigate through an entire star field? How would you be able to navigate through the vastness of space, meteor fields, all of that stuff without having some type of like observation technology?
At what point does a telescope become a microscope?
Good question.
Interesting.
It's much smaller lens, 100%.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if they're looking from like their planet through some sort of that zooms in on us, is it a telescope at that point or a microscope?
Telescope.
That's how big they are. From
far away.
Yeah, but if they're seeing us up close.
But we're not microscopic. Unless they're really big.
Giant.
Okay, well, I'll give a quick theory, then we'll move on here. I think people always say, like, oh, they're observing us from a different part of the galaxy. And there's also the other side. We talk about it. This glowing orb is the physical representation of them staring through the dimension. They're just poking. They're not even here.
Ooh, I like that.
They're just not even here. They're poking in from their dimension, and they know, like, oh, there's going to be this light, and we're going to see it, and we're not going to be able to identify it or analyze it because it's not really here. It's just a ball of light. And then when they do the shutter on the fucking interdimensional telescope, microscope, whatever scope, the light just goes out. They're poking in, observing.
How would they observe like such boring things though?
It's the
World War II.
That's what I'm saying though. We're at the peak of human conflict. This is the
But it's not like. But the pilots that did reported were on like very. Typical, very boring patrols.
But here's the thing, but they don't know, right? They don't know. So maybe it's like, maybe they're like, oh shit, they're flying. Maybe we can watch this. Maybe they're going to get in a fucking battle or something. This is boring. Let's peace out.
Maybe the only reason we know about these is because they got away. Maybe the ones fucking didn't make it away.
It's like, okay, yeah, they got seen on this boring mission. They just made a little bit of a mistake. They're like, but usually they observe from a much higher altitude or something, and they can see more. And this, the few circumstances where this happened during the war, and then immediately after the war ends, this whatever probe, this interdimensional probe, just vanishes. It's gone. The war is over. They're like, all right, we can take
We still had more wars. We still had like Vietnam War, nothing, the Korean War.
Nothing on the scale of World War II. Not even close.
But the technology was a lot more advanced. They're using a lot more ordnance and things like that.
Maybe they're still observing. Maybe because people do still
see. Maybe their technology advanced.
Yeah. I like that.
People still see orbs and stuff. That's what I'm saying.
They've tuned up the Disney ride.
Let's fire up the Randomatron. I got to pee.
Oh, now someone else has to pee.
Oh, you got to pee twice during a case.
I already peed. Well, I tried.
All right.
Didn't only pee once, but we're
definitely going long.
It's long.
All right.
I've got to eat dinner.
It's a fun case. The Foo Fighters.
Fighters.
There's a reason it's lingered since World War II. It's a cool event filled with, you know, pilot testimony. And there is some pictures and like bad video out there, but it's hard because in the 40s where film is bad at this time. So
yeah, it's silent film. It's black and white. It's got Charlie Chaplin in it.
Not silent anymore, but.
I'm just joking.
Charlie Chaplin movies are so funny.
I couldn't tell.
Apparently.
All right, it's not a good one. Let's fire up that Randomatron.
All right, let's go. Randomatron coming up. Let me flick some knobs over here.
Yeah, flick them. Flick those knobs. Ripped it out right here. Here you go. There it is.
There it is.
Oh, thank you. Space news!
Oh, what do you got?
The uncontrolled, the death lottery has been, you know, they drew the numbers and no one won or lost. I don't know. The uncontrolled rocket segment finally re-entered Earth's atmosphere. It crashed down near the Maldives. No reports of any injuries or anything. It sounds like it came down mostly in the ocean.
What's that? It was too good not to share.
That's pretty good. It came down in the ocean and, you know,
no one got murdered.
No one got murdered. So we're safe from now. We're going to see how this impacts, you know, this did ruffle a lot of feathers. Like people were upset because a lot of people in the space community are starting to think that China's getting pretty negligent with their rocket launches. And so we'll see if maybe this leads to further regulations in that kind of area. But or else expect more death lotteries on the way.
That's two of the same lifter both come back in uncontrolled. So
yeah.
Careful out there.
What else I have? A Venus flyby reveals some AM radio. Not really. Low frequency radio signals detected in the planet's atmosphere. We're not really sure what it is. The Parker Solar Probe detected something odd as it dipped just 833 kilometers above the Venetian surface. Hey, our name's etched on that thing.
It's on there.
It's on there. It's going to end up in the sun.
In the sun.
Sweet.
But it dipped down and they detected some low frequency radio signals, which I asked Zell, I said, which is lower frequency, AM or FM? And he said, well, in that scenario, AM. And I said, they have AM radio. So
longer wave, longer
band. Coast to coast, AM.
Yeah. Coast to coast, AM.
Longer band radio at nighttime, that baby can travel quite a distance.
And one other piece of space news. We got some update from the Voyager 1. The Voyager 1, which was launched like 43 years ago.
Way back when.
It's now past the heliosphere. It's way out in deep space, fucking way out there. You know, in what everyone thought would be the silence void of space. Well, it turns out the silence isn't so silent as it continues to pick up a hum of plasma waves. So there's
a
low hum in space. Interesting. I thought that was kind of a cool little story about the Voyager probe, little check-in. I like when that thing checks in, man. I wonder when it's going to get intercepted by someone or something. Trace it back to us. Anyways, that's all I had for space news. Did you guys have anything else?
We got to have a little bit of a listen to the helicopter on Mars. Here it's what it sounds like, a chopper on Mars. It's only 1%. The air is only 1% as dense, so sound does not travel the same. But this is the chopper. Got a nice low rumble to it. Those extra mouth sounds are pretty much exactly right.
Drop the beat.
I can't wait till someone dubsteps that.
Yeah. I bet the rover let the chopper go. The chopper is about 260 feet away, so they weren't sure if it was going to be able to pick up the rotor wash because the atmosphere is so thin, but it does pick up the very low frequencies. And that's what you just heard. So
cool.
So audio from a different planet. Who would have thunk?
Robot on another planet.
When we listened to it, Zell, we were watching. There's a video attached with it. You can watch it fly. And Zell the whole time was complaining about the audio. He's like, this audio is trash. It's garbage. This is terrible. And I'm like, are you complaining about
the first space ever audio.
Space audio from
Dude,
Mars?
He's like,
look at the video. It's terrible.
No, I said the video is 4K. The video is crisp. You can zoom in on a fucking grain on a fucking piece of rock on Mars. And you can't get a good microphone? Come on, people.
I had a good recording and broadcasting sounds from the surface of an entirely different planet.
That's what I'm talking about.
You need Meteor Studios to do your recordings. You let us know.
Get closer. NASA,
call us.
The Randomatron also printed out a fan story.
Bonus.
Boom. This is from Ellie Wednesday. UFO story? UFO story? Apologies in advance for the long story. My story is a secondhand account from my parents, from when they both lived at my grandparents' house.
A cold all of a sudden.
That was weird. Door open? What the fuck is that?
Ghosts.
No, seriously. Goop.
Demons.
Got really cold
that was freaky.
Somebody opened the door for sure.
That's what I thought.
Keep breathing. It's fine.
No, that didn't sound very fucking it's fine. Assuring.
It's fine. Keep breathing. Finish the case file.
I kind of freaked
finish
out.
Finish it.
Okay.
Keep going. Keep reading the fucking story.
Are you playing sounds now?
Yeah, he is.
Okay, good.
I'm always playing sounds.
All right, it scared me. I actually got spooked there. The house is about 1 hour and 20 minutes off the coast of New South Wales of Australia. Is that what NSW is?
Yep.
New South
Wales.
Yep.
On a
New
private,
South Wales?
Hello? on a private dirt road in the mountains, which only has 4 or 5 other properties on it. The house is almost right where the valley starts to drop, so you have a pretty good view of the scenery. You can even see the tiny lights from other houses on private roads all the way across the valley from us every night. So we know that this wasn't affecting what they were seeing. The area has always had good vibes for us all. They built the house themselves in the 70s as a sort of early retirement from the rest of the world. My mom always tells me about the strange lights that would hover above the mountains across from the valley some nights. 3 huge orange lights. It sounds like Foo Fighters.
Foo Fighters.
She says that they would swap places occasionally, but fast, sort of like you do when you hide a coin under one of 3 cups and shuffle them. They say if they stood on the balcony facing the valley and turned the lights on and off, a huge light would disappear and reappear as if copying them. My grandparents say that when my dad was a teenager, his friends tried camping outside from the house but came running back in around midnight talking about seeing lights and that it was making their tents almost glow orange and it was freaking them out. Grandma always said that they were exaggerating because the lights never got that close. Dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot.
Don't do that.
My mom always says that one night she was there with only me, about a year old at the time. Then this is a first-hand account, motherfucker. This isn't, you were there. And she saw the lights again. It was something that happened every few months at this point. I'm guessing, or at least semi-regularly enough for it not to have worried her.
Put your headphones on.
She turned the lights on and off like a tradition, as if to say, hello, old friends. But instead of copying, apparently they zipped across the valley and hovered above the house. She doesn't report hearing any noise, but thinks they were still swapping spots as such, because the lights was sort of shifting around outside. She said I wasn't bothered by it, the fact it was nearly daylight outside except for glowing orange. Apparently she stood still for what felt like 5 or 10 minutes, not feeling bad or strange, just a little scared, as that had never happened before. After that time, they went back to their usual spot across the valley and simply disappeared and never reappeared. Mom talks about it openly when I ask, but Dad doesn't like to talking about it at all and doesn't have an explanation. He's not a superstitious guy, super down to earth and is always has a logical answer for everything that usually turns out to be right. And yet, the most we have ever gotten out of him was, yeah, there was something out there, but I have no idea what it was, though. Still, he's the only one that has ever been creeped out by the lights and still is to this day. Mom says those bushlands are super weird, but we all feel safe there and always have. My dad still lives there with my grandparents to this day. Thanks for reading it, if you got this far, and for making my day every day. I miss Canada so much, and you guys give me a taste of my second home. Ellie Wednesday. Hey, Ellie, fucking great story.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Damn good story.
Scary.
If your grandparents or your father ever get pictures of this thing or these lights, please.
Send them in.
Send them our way.
Booyah. Great story.
That was a good one.
If you have a story you want to tell, send it to alientheorists@gmail.com. Make sure to put randomatron submission and say if Brayden can read your name or make one up for you. Theorite of the week. Brother.
Steve Johnson.
Steve Johnson. Steve
Johnson.
That fucking tattoo needs to be like, you need to picture that. You need to frame it.
Memorialized.
It's beautiful.
If you don't know the tattoo we're talking about, it's on the Facebook group. Go to facebook.com, search Alien Theorist, the Theorite page. We'll pin it to the top. It's a fucking gorgeous tattoo of Bigfoot. Having
Bigfoot waved out. Looking fly.
Yeah, clapping some alien cheeks.
Big time.
The aliens looking sexy as hell, leaning back.
It's a little bit weird, but it's kind of...
It works, yeah.
It's kind of... The aliens looking weird. Back at it, like, it's kind of sexy.
I mean...
It's weird.
Yep.
Made me feel uncomfortable.
Great tattoo. I coined it as evolution.
Yeah. Evolution.
Fuck yeah.
It was
natural
phenomenal.
Selection.
Yeah, natural selection.
Was awesome. And the fact that you put that on your body, amazing.
Yeah, hilarious.
Phenomenal. Good on you. You're beautiful.
There forever.
Theory of the week.
Easily.
Cheers. If you're not supporting the show and you want to get early access, bonus stuff, live streams, and all the rest, head over to patreon.com/alientheoristpodcast or just check the link in the podcast description, The link tree. Easy.
Check it.
Support
Click on it.
Check it out.
Click on it. Scroll down 3 tabs. Got it. No excuse. This week's Patreon supporters, Peyton. Is that
Manning?
Is that a mill? I or an L? McIff or McCliff?
McCliff.
McCliff. McCliff. McIff. Captain Jive. Yeah. Devin B. Jens John. I recognize that name. They're back. Supported for a while. Now they're back.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Fooly Cooley with double exclamation marks. Mike. Lance Stevens. George Vasquez.
Recognize that name too.
Kelly Hendricks. Recognize that name. Repeats. Virginia Lee Wallace and Christopher Isaac, thank you very much for supporting the show.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.